The LexisNexis Corporate and Securities Law Community Podcast. Presentations and interviews with leading attorneys and industry professionals. On this edition, Jonathan Eisenberg on the U.S. Supreme Court's recent grant of certiorari in Amgen versus Connecticut Retirement Plans and Trust Funds. The opinions expressed by guests on LexisNexis Legal Podcasts do not necessarily reflect those of Reed Elsevier Incorporated, LexisNexis, subsidiary companies, shareholders, employees, or customers, and should not be considered legal advice. Jonathan Eisenberg is editor of Litigating Securities Class Actions, a 2011 treatise which focuses on many of the most critical issues that frequently arise in securities class action litigation, and which is available from LexisNexis. Mr. Eisenberg is a member of the Board of Editors for LexisNexis Securities Law Publications, the former chair of the Corporation Finance and Securities Law Section of the D.C. Bar, the former chair of the Section Chairs of the D.C. Bar, and the former co-chair of the Civil Litigation and SEC Enforcement Subcommittee of the American Bar Association. He graduated from Cornell University in 1974 and the University of Virginia School of Law in 1977. Here's John Eisenberg.
Hi, my name is John Eisenberg. I should point out that the views I express are solely my own, not those of any company with which I'm affiliated. The podcast considers the implication of the Supreme Court's recent decision to grant certiorari in Connecticut Retirement Plans and Trust Funds v. Amgen, a Ninth Circuit decision reported at 660 F3rd 1170. The case deals with the requirements of the fraud on the market presumption of reliance, approved by the Supreme Court in its 1988 decision in Basic v. Levinson, and which is critical to the certification of class actions under Section 10B of the Securities Exchange Act. The two questions certified are the following. One, whether, in a misrepresentation case under Section 10B, the district court must require proof of materiality before certifying a plaintiff class based on the fraud on the market theory. The Ninth Circuit, in the decision under review, held that a plaintiff need not prove materiality at the class certification stage, even though it has to prove materiality at the eventual trial. The second question certified is whether, in such a case, the district court must allow the defendant to present evidence rebutting the applicability of the fraud on the market theory before certifying a plaintiff class based on that theory. The Ninth Circuit held that the district court appropriately rejected plaintiff's effort to rebut the fraud on the market theory by attempting to show a truth in the market defense, even though it could assert that defense at a trial on the merits. So essentially, the Ninth Circuit drew a very strong distinction between merits issues and class issues and held that materiality was a merits issue not appropriate to be raised at class certification in connection with the fraud on the market theory. Just to hint at the conclusion, I will conclude that the Ninth Circuit may well have misapplied the fraud on the market presumption of reliance, that there is a substantial but by no means certain chance of reversal, but that even reversal is likely to have only a modest effect on the vast majority of securities class actions under Section 10B. All right, so before turning to Amgen, let's talk a little bit about the fraud on the market presumption and why it's so critical in securities class actions. The vast majority of securities class actions are brought under Section 10B of the Securities Exchange Act, which is the principal anti-fraud provision of the federal securities laws. One of the elements of Section 10B is that investors have to show that they relied on the alleged misrepresentations or omissions in making their investment decisions. Essentially, that but for the alleged misrepresentations or omissions, they would not have purchased the securities at issue, or, depending on the allegations, that they would have not sold the securities. There are a number of elements in a typical Section 10B class action that lend themselves to common proof. For example, did somebody make the alleged misrepresentations or omissions? Were the alleged misrepresentations or omissions actually false? Did defendants act with scienter? Were the statements material? All of these types of issues generally lend themselves to common proof, which is essential in getting a class action certified as a class action. But at least at first blush, reliance is not one of the elements that lends itself to common proof. To the contrary, on its face, reliance is an inherently individualized issue that requires inquiry into whether each individual member of a purported class would have purchased or, depending on the allegations, sold the securities at issue absent the alleged misrepresentations or omissions. And individualized reliance issues generally preclude class certification because a class trial would resolve very little if, before liability could be determined, each member of the class still had to be interrogated about whether his or her investment decisions were influenced by the alleged misrepresentations or omissions. This is where Basic v. Levinson, a Supreme Court decision from 1988, and the fraud on the market presumption of reliance come into the picture. In Basic, which was a Section 10B securities class action, the Supreme Court observed, quote, requiring proof of individualized reliance from each member of the proposed plaintiff class effectively would have prevented respondents from proceeding with a class action, since individualized issues then would have overwhelmed the common ones. The court then accepted the presumption that a number of lower courts had developed, but that is not generally followed outside the federal securities class actions. And that is that investors who trade company shares in an efficient market, quote, had done so in reliance on the integrity of the price set by the market. That, quote, an investor who buys or sells stock at the price set by the market does so in reliance on the integrity of that price. And that, quote, because most publicly available information is reflected in market price, an investor's reliance on any public material misrepresentations therefore may be presumed for purposes of a Section 10B action, end quote. In effect, the court said that instead of a plaintiff having to show that he or she relied on a particular misrepresentation or omission, he or she could simply be presumed to have relied on the integrity of the price set by the market, and that therefore reliance could be presumed across the entire class of investors and, in the ordinary case, would not be an obstacle to class certification. The result is that while there are exceptions, securities class actions under Section 10B usually are certified when the fraud on the market presumption of reliance applies, but usually are not certified when the fraud on the market presumption does not apply. In the latter case, individual issues of reliance overwhelm common issues and preclude class certification. While endorsing the fraud on the market presumption of reliance, the Supreme Court in Basic said relatively little about what is required to establish the fraud on the market presumption. Instead, in footnote 27 of the opinion, it noted that the Court of Appeals below, the Sixth Circuit, had held that in order to invoke the presumption, a plaintiff had to allege and prove the following five elements. One, that the defendant made public misrepresentations. Two, and this is important, that the misrepresentations were material. Three, that the shares were traded on an efficient market. Four, that the misrepresentations would induce a reasonable relying investor to misjudge the value of the shares. And five, that the plaintiff traded the shares between the time the misrepresentations were made and the time the truth was revealed. The court also said that two of the elements could be collapsed into one. Those two elements were materiality, the second element, and the fourth element, which was that the misrepresentations would induce a reasonable relying investor to misjudge the value of the shares. And I think that the court did that because the way it defined materiality essentially picked up the second concept. Since a misrepresentation that is material is a misrepresentation that is likely to mislead an investor about the value of the shares, the fourth element was superfluous once materiality was demonstrated. With regard to rebutting the fraud on the market theory, which is also an issue in Amgen, the Supreme Court stated that there was wide latitude for a defendant to rebut. It stated, quote, any showing that severs the link between the alleged misrepresentation and either the price received by the plaintiff or his decision to trade at a fair market price will be sufficient to rebut the presumption of reliance. And then it gave some examples. For example, it said, if petitioners could show that market makers were privy to the truth about, in that case, the merger discussions, and thus that the market price would not have been affected by their misrepresentations, the causal connection could be broken. The basis for finding that the fraud had been transmitted through market price would be gone, the court said. Similarly, it said, if despite petitioners' allegedly fraudulent attempt to manipulate market price, news of the merger discussions, which was what was at issue in Basic, credibly entered the market and dissipated the effects of the misstatements, those who traded the shares after the corrective statements would have no direct or indirect connection with the fraud. And then it went on to give some other examples as well. So it was obvious that while Basic adopted the fraud on the market presumption of reliance, it's a rebuttable presumption, and the court gave wide latitude to defendants to rebut in a number of different ways. So overall, if we step back and take a look at Basic, essentially, what we take from it is, one, an acknowledgement that absent a fraud on the market presumption of reliance, individual issues of reliance would generally defeat certification of classes in Section 10B cases. Two, that the fraud on the market presumption could be used to overcome what would otherwise be an insurmountable barrier to class certification. Three, that while it was not dictating what was necessary to support the application of the fraud on the market presumption of reliance, the court below had required, among other things, proof of materiality for the presumption to apply. And four, while the fraud on the market theory created a presumption of reliance in favor of a class of investors, defendants should be permitted wide latitude to rebut that presumption through any showing that severs the link between the alleged misrepresentation and the price paid by the plaintiff or his decision to trade at a fair market price. Now let's take a look at the Ninth Circuit's decision in Amgen, which is the decision that the Supreme Court is now going to review. So Amgen is the largest biotechnology company in the world. It focuses on the use of human proteins as therapeutic agents for treating serious illnesses. It's a large and very successful company. In 2011, it had sales of more than $15 billion. Plaintiffs in the case under review sued Amgen and, as is often the case in securities class actions, a number of its officers and directors, and they sued on behalf of all persons who had purchased stock in Amgen between April 22, 2004 and May 10, 2007, a class spanning more than 3 years. They claimed that during that period, the defendants violated Section 10B of the Securities Exchange Act by misrepresenting or omitting material facts regarding the safety of two of Amgen's products, which are used to treat anemia. In particular, they alleged that defendants downplayed FDA safety concerns in advance of an FDA meeting with a group of oncologists, that they concealed details about a clinical trial that was canceled over concerns that its product exacerbated tumor growth in a small number of patients, that it exaggerated the safety of its products for FDA-approved uses, and that it misrepresented its marketing practices because it promoted its products for uses that the FDA had not approved. Again, those are the plaintiff's allegations, not something that any court found. The district court denied Amgen's motion to dismiss and certify the case as a class action. Defendants then filed an interlocutory appeal to the Ninth Circuit under Rule 23F of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure. Rule 23F was added to the federal rules in 1998 in order to allow a discretionary route to appellate review of class certification decisions. As a result, there's now a much more developed body of circuit court case law dealing with class certification decisions. The Ninth Circuit agreed to hear Amgen's appeal, and it's a discretionary decision by the Ninth Circuit, but upon hearing it, then affirmed the decision of the district court certifying the case as a class action. Like the district court, the Ninth Circuit relied on the fraud on the market theory. It said, quote, anyone who buys stock at the prevailing market price is presumed to have relied on that price. And by extension, each piece of publicly available information it reflects as a measure of the stock's value, even if the investor never saw that information, end quote. Like the district court, the Court of Appeals found that the fraud on the market presumption applied by showing merely that Amgen stock traded in an efficient market, which Amgen conceded, and that the alleged statements were public, which Amgen did not contest. It held that at the class certification stage, the plaintiff did not need to prove, but rather could merely allege, that Amgen's alleged misrepresentations were material. It also held that rebuttal of the presumption of reliance had to await trial or summary judgment when the rebuttal consisted of evidence purportedly showing that the truth behind each of the supposed statements had already entered the market. While stating that there are three circuits, the first, second, and fifth, that appear to require a plaintiff also to prove materiality in order to use the fraud on the market presumption, the Ninth Circuit sided with the Third and Seventh Circuits in concluding that this was based on a misreading of footnote 27 of the Supreme Court's decision in Basic. The Seventh Circuit read Basic as simply pointing out that the Court of Appeals in that case happened to hold materiality essential, not that the Supreme Court was adopting it as a precondition to class certification. The Ninth Circuit stated that, quote, because proof of materiality is not necessary to ensure that the question of reliance is common among all prospective class members' securities fraud claims, we hold plaintiffs need not prove materiality to avail themselves of the fraud on the market presumption of reliance at the class certification stage. So essentially what the Ninth Circuit did is it drew a fairly clear distinction between materiality as a merits issue and fraud on the market as a issue taken up at class certification. And it said that materiality remained a merits issue but was not a class certification issue, and that fraud on the market, presumption of reliance, could and should be decided without getting into the merits issue of materiality. The Supreme Court granted cert, presumably to resolve the conflict in the circuits on whether materiality has to be shown to invoke the fraud on the market presumption of reliance in securities class actions under Section 10B. There are other provisions in which some securities class actions are brought, particularly Sections 11 and 12, where a reliance may not be an issue, but as I mentioned, Section 10B is the provision in which the vast majority of securities class actions are brought, and in that case, reliance is clearly required. Arguably, the Seventh and Ninth Circuits have come out one way, saying that materiality is not an issue at the class certification stage, while the First, Second, and Fifth Circuits arguably have come out the other way, saying it is. So without venturing a prediction on the outcome, a number of points are worth emphasizing. First, in its recent cases, and particularly in its Walmart Stores v. Duke's opinion decided just last year, the Supreme Court has stated that class action is an exception to the usual rule that litigation is conducted by and on behalf of individual named parties only. Second, Rule 23, which governs class actions, is not a mere pleading standard. rather, under clear Supreme Court precedent, particularly in the last decade, a party seeking class certification has to affirmatively prove that the requirements of class certification have been met. The trial court may not certify a class action unless it is satisfied, quote, after rigorous analysis, end quote, that the requirements of Rule 23 have been satisfied. Third, this is important, the rigorous analysis inquiry will often entail overlap with the merits of the plaintiff's underlying claims on the merits, but that is no bar to addressing these issues at the class certification stage. Indeed, the Supreme Court has stated, and I quote, the class determination generally involves considerations that are enmeshed in the factual and legal issues comprising the plaintiff's cause of action, end quote. Fourth, while the fraud on the market presumption has traditionally been associated primarily with the reliance element of Section 10B, there is a decent argument that if the stock market does not respond to a material misstatement, there should be no presumption of reliance. The whole premise of the fraud on the market presumption is that the market will react to misrepresentations and omissions. But it won't react if the misrepresentations or omissions are immaterial. That is the principal basis for the argument that materiality is not only a merits issue, but, like reliance, a class certification issue as well. Fifth, BASIC itself seemed to say that a defendant should have wide latitude in the context of class certification to rebut the fraud on the market theory. It nowhere suggested that this had to await a final decision on the merits. Sixth, BASIC also listed the equivalent of the truth in the market defense, which is what Amgen sought to show to defeat application of the fraud on the market presumption, as one of the ways to defeat application of the fraud on the market presumption. By disproving materiality, a defendant indirectly shows lack of price impact and defeats the fraud on the market theory. Seventh, to be sure, not all merits issues overlap with class issues, as the Supreme Court made clear last term in its Halliburton decision. But BASIC itself arguably links materiality to the fraud on the market presumption, and Halliburton did not address the issue in Amgen, which is the significance of materiality at the class certification stage in a fraud on the market case. Finally, it is almost certainly the case that a majority of the Supreme Court today is less sympathetic to expansive class actions and expansive readings of Section 10B than it was at the time of its plurality decision in BASIC in 1988. This does not mean that the Supreme Court will necessarily reverse, but it does mean that there is a significant chance of reversal. Okay, so what are the implications if it does reverse? To be honest, I'm not sure it will be terribly significant in the vast majority of securities class actions. Yes, securities class actions are big business. According to Cornerstone Research, between 2002 and 2011, companies paid $58.5 billion to resolve securities class actions. Defendants in Enron paid $7.2 billion alone, and WorldCom $6.2 billion, and Ascendant $3.7 billion, a number of other multi-billion-dollar settlements. And yes, the class certification is critical to defendants in securities class actions. One important fact about securities class actions is that very few of them are resolved through trials. Indeed, a recent NERA survey concluded that since 1995, more than 3,000 securities class actions have been filed, typically involving multiple defendants, and yet only 29 of those cases even got to trial, and even some of those settled before the trial was concluded. Because fewer than 1% of securities class actions go to trial, the pretrial phase, including the fight over class certification, can be critical. Why, then, might Amgen still be of limited importance, regardless of the outcome? The reason is that materiality is rarely the major issue in securities class action. The major fight tends to be around scienter, or whether a statement was indeed false, or whether the allegedly false statement was the cause of the losses suffered. Since materiality has been defined rather broadly by the Supreme Court in TSE Industries and in BASIC itself, in most cases, a plaintiff will be able to show that if indeed the alleged statements were false and misleading, then they were material as well. In other words, in most, though not all cases, if plaintiff is given the burden of showing materiality at the class certification, it may well be able to meet that burden in the vast majority of cases. If that's the case, then even a reversal in Amgen may only have a modest effect in most other securities class actions. Of course, if the Supreme Court decides to go beyond the specific issue of the relationship of materiality to the fraud on the market presumption, and to revisit the fraud on the market presumption more fundamentally, that could have a huge effect on securities class actions. To date, however, the Roberts Court has not shown a willingness to overturn established Supreme Court, as opposed to lower court precedent in the securities area. And even though BASIC was decided by a four-person plurality, who may not represent the views of a majority of the current court, there's no indication at this point that the Roberts Court will fundamentally re-examine the fraud on the market presumption, as opposed to tinkering with some of its elements.
Thank you for listening to this LexisNexis legal podcast. Visit the LexisNexis communities. Like the communities on Facebook. Follow them on Twitter. The LexisNexis Corporate and Securities Law Community Podcast, copyright 2012 by LexisNexis, a division of Reed Elsevier Incorporated. All rights reserved.